Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show.
Is it possible to lead a regenerative business? Not just a sustainable business, but a business that creates profit and achieves system-wide net positive impact. That, my friend, is the next generation of leadership. And today on Conscious Curiosity, we have such a leader, Dr. Cindy J. Lin. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really thrilled to be here.
Cindy J. is the CEO and co-founder of Hey Social Good, a social impact tech company that connects people to credible and well-researched data and social good alternatives. Dr. Lin has an amazing background, many years with the EPA, with significant roles like regional expert on Clean Water Act, the expert scientist with the U.S. Applied Climate Change National Work Group, was a water advisor at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing, and the U.S. EPA's top science and policy advisor on the U.S.-China team. Very impressive. Then she got bored, decided to put the clutch in, make a hard right-hand turn, and become an entrepreneur. So that was a big move. So besides being the CEO and co-founder of Hey Social Good, she's also the chair and president of the San Diego Environmental Film Festival, which I'm very excited to hear about that. I love film festivals. Involved with the UC San Diego on the faculty. She's on the board of Business for Good, where we met back, not even that long ago. Yeah, a few months ago during the strategic planning process.
Right.
So my first question is, do you sleep or are you just 24/7 at it?
I do sleep. That's one of my top priorities, is to make sure I get so many hours so I can do all the things that I want to do.
So what are you good at? I need six. That's why I kind of operate at six. I'm actually good with six.
Seven and a half.
Nice. Yeah. I don't set an alarm, so I just assume I'm getting enough sleep. Well, you are an expert on the environment. You got your technical background and you get all that. It's amazing. Here's my big question for you. From the environmental perspective, are we screwed or do we actually have a chance of coming out of what seems to be some sort of death spiral in regards to the earth and the world and everything imploding with global warming and everything else that we hear? What's the unhyped true story here?
Thank you for the question. And the answer is yes to both.
We are screwed, but we still have a chance.
Absolutely. It's not new what we've been doing as human species to try to create impact to support ourselves. We're just one of many species on this planet. And, you know, if you look at the history of human beings, we've always made impact in different ways. But at every juncture and every point, somehow we recognize that we need to make change. And not to be too policy wonky, but this is a big reason why the U.S. Environment Protection Agency was established in 1970. And then moved on to create 30 plus different environmental laws, because we as citizens here in the United States recognize, like, oh, darn it, we got to make some changes. We got to clean up. We got to do these things. So I really believe in our system and the rule of law and actually people's heart. And, you know, when the time comes, they eventually get to the point where we need to make change. We just have to get the word out more.
Some really good things have happened along the way. I remember as a kid, my grandparents had a property on Lake Erie. So we used to go out there.
It's a good one.
And it's kind of scary. Depending on how many dead fish had were up on the shore, was if we got to go in the water or not. And it was always like, don't put your head under the water. But, you know, and I think the thought back then was, that's it. Lake Erie's like a dead lake. It'll never come back. And it did.
It did.
We cleaned things up. When we put our minds to things, we can fix some stuff up. Also COVID, like when they shut everything down for a while. It was amazing how quickly things started like making a big shift.
I know. So the ecosystem is really resilient. If we give them time and space, they'll recover, which is not just for them, but actually for us, because we rely, obviously, on clean air, clean water, all of those good things.
All right, to survive. Well, let's start a little bit with you.
Okay.
What brought you to this fight? I mean, how did you end up in this space?
That's a really good question. Okay. So when I was 10 years old, and I'm not sure why I was reading this, I came across a poem, probably from a teacher in elementary school, by Edward Abbey. He's a conservationist, a naturalist. And something about his poem spoke to me about making our home safe and clean and to protect our wild and ourselves. And so somehow, I don't really know, from that point, I had learned about the U.S. Environment Protection Agency, and that was my goal as a kid.
At 10?
Yes, that I wanted to work at EPA. Can you imagine?
What a weird little kid you
were. It was. Both my parents were immigrants, and, you know, they were not at all in that space. They were kind of business entrepreneurs themselves, like immigrants, and they're just like, we don't understand what you want to do. But I don't know where it is. I think part of it is that I really see the connection between people and what makes us the best that we can be as human beings, as part of the species on this planet. And I just think it's so important to maintain that and to see the well-being of not just people, but also all the other animals and flora and fauna around us. And I probably just have this innate curiosity about that. So I was an ecologist, and that just made me even more excited. One of my first research projects was on Dectocene katydids in Costa Rica's cloud forest. And that's when I realized, like, we are literally connected to everything, by the way. That's just kind of like a grasshopper-ish for people. But I just love learning about how we're connected to people and understanding that. That really just sparked my curiosity and just interest in this space.
So you just had a love for science as well? I mean,
I thought I was going to be an environmental journalist, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yes, that was my goal.
Environment definitely was centerpiece.
Yes.
How were you going to play in the space?
Yes. I didn't even know how to do that, but I knew I wanted to work on the environment in some ways. And I knew I wanted to be one of the fighters on that. I don't know. My mom would say you were just born with it. I'm not sure where that came from. I think to me, it's about us recognizing ourselves as part of just our environment. And I feel like people understand it, but sometimes we get lost on what's in front of us.
I like this idea that when you look around, everything is risen up from the earth.
Yes.
I mean, the building we're sitting in, this table, right?
100%.
I mean, it's from the earth. And just like us, we're going to go dust to dust and all kinds of good stuff. Same thing with this. Someday this thing will decay and go back. So everything we see, quite honestly, is we're connected to all that. And I think that's the point you're making. I am connected to this table too, right? We're all from the same place. Yeah.
I think so. And I think that we're not disconnected. We just get really busy doing the things that are important. I'm not saying it's not, but we somehow lose sight of the other things.
So what gives you the passion to go out and fight?
I just don't think I have a choice. I mean, to be honest, that's a big reason why I jumped from federal government to doing what I'm doing, is I feel like if I am not one of the voices then to support this movement, then we may not win. And I really believe we can. And the reason I think we can win is because we've done it before. So the U.S. isn't different than any other country in this world where we've polluted ourselves, right? I really believe in the U.S. rule of law. Not just because I worked at the government for so long, but I've seen it work. Yes, we struggle constantly, but I really believe in the inherent goodness of people and people recognizing, like, oh, shoot, we better do something. So that's probably what drives me, is that I think that if we somehow get people engaged in every single way possible, whether that's data or a story or a connection, then people will want to do it too. And it keeps all of us feeling positive and moving forward.
Love that. That's good stuff. Yeah, I was going to ask you that, what led you from, obviously you had some very high positions in EPA, which I would have to say at the end of the day were having a significant impact. And we were talking about that earlier, just, you know, when you got the government behind you, right, you can make some things happen. But you decided to leave that big machine and all the things that come with it, I guess probably the good, bad, the ugly, whatever, and go, all right, I'm going to go be my own person out here and go kind of fight this battle by myself at some level. At least you're starting to get some things around you. But why make that move? What did you see the potential was of being more the solo entrepreneur, being a founder, start your own business versus being part of the big machine?
First of all, I just want to say I loved being at US EPA. It was a dream and a dream come true. And I've been there a really long time and I got to do so many cool stuff. I'm one of those, like, you know, I can't sit still kind of a person. And I was really, really fortunate that I got to do really, really interesting things to make impact. And I got to see impact. And all the people who work at EPA still to this day, their, you know, public service is calling, I would say. But what probably made me shift is probably a little bit of inherent frustration of recognition of, like, the limits of our laws. I actually just had a conversation with someone who is in government about this. So if that person's listening, they'll realize, like, what I'm saying. But for me, the laws are super critical in helping us move forward. So for example, right, California now has a new compost law. everybody has a compost. Now, the implementation of that is at the city level. And so it's great. The city gets to decide how they're going to do that. Going back to your question of why did I jump, it's because I recognize that we, our laws, we've done a lot of them. Every single pipe that there's a pollution coming out of it or pollutant, we've basically permitted it and we worked on it. The problem is a lot of our pollution are now not trackable directly. So we call those non-source pollution, whereas we don't know where it's coming from, right? So a good example of that is cars and emissions, mobile sources. I'm not about to go permit every single car because of their mobile emissions. And so what the government doesn't do as well is to tell the public in a very marketing way, because that's not our goal, to try to explain how their part is. That's not how EPA is structured. That is not how basically the laws work in that way, right? We have these directives and these things we must do in under the law. A lot of that comes from people. And as I would say, that's the flexibility, right? And the way the U.S. rule of law works, which is we look at information. We as individuals can make decisions about ourselves of whether I want to buy this or buy that. And I started to recognize more of that when I was at EPA. I gave so many public workshops. It was a learning on my own. As a scientist or as a policymaker, how we tell the information was really critical. And there's a lot of times where I just messed up. The public who's there and they care didn't understand a word I said. And that was very, very informative and a teaching lesson for myself of like, oh, wait, I thought I just spent all this time. We spent all this time trying to get the best data, the best information to try to create a standard that protects our drinking water or our surface water, right? And here we are people who didn't understand a word I said. And I was like, that's a problem.
Would you say it's more of a technical thing or they just didn't know how to apply what you were trying to get to? And where was the failure? What was the miscommunication?
Great question. I spent years thinking about that. One is a technical problem. Someone once told us, EPA people, like, you know, nobody understands what you guys are saying.
we appreciate you, but what are you talking about?
They're like, you guys don't write in a way that people understand. If you talk to one of those really talented people who are like, you know, journalists or communicators or marketing or branding people, they're like, what are you guys talking about? And when I became aware of that, that's when I realized, oh, darn, here we are thinking we're doing all these amazing things, which I believe we are, but we're not doing a good job of encouraging and inspiring our citizens to act in the same way.
Got it. All right. Okay.
That's not under the law.
Right. Here's the law.
The law didn't say that must be part of your goal, right? The law says, hey, here's a pollution. How are we going to address it? How are we going to permit it? How are we going to fix it? What's the data we need? What are the standards we got to meet, right? All of those things. And so for me, I think that recognition of we got to do better. And I've done a long time at the agency and I recognize like, okay, well, and I mentioned earlier that I had kind of an identity crisis of like, okay, I spent all my time doing this. Here's the big gap and miss that I see. Am I able to try to fill that gap? And do I stay where I am, seeing that gap grow over the years? And I just couldn't do that. I felt like I had to do my part. So I did come out. And to your point, it was very, all of a sudden without, you know, kind of that agency behind me, it was really scary and hard, to be honest.
Who are you?
Who are you, Cindy Lynn, right? Like, what are you about? And so, but what I found, and I think what keeps me going is I keep meeting people. I mean, like yourself, Jeff, and lots of other businesses and organizations who are like, we want to do more. We're just not sure what's the best way. We're not sure how to go about it. What data are we supposed to collect, you know, or what method or what things do we have to do? Because unfortunately, in the world of sustainability or environment in the private sector, there are no laws. There are no standards. There's a lot of recommended standards, but there's nothing concrete. So you as a business owner, founder, what entity, you're kind of on your own, which may be a good or a bad thing.
I mean, even in your home.
Exactly.
I mean, am I following the composting thing or am I just putting everything still the way I always did? Or am I just taking a 30-minute shower every day? Or am I conscious of the fact that we actually do have a water problem? So we get to make a lot of decisions. So I love what you said. You saw the work you were doing, great work, and really defining and putting laws. And laws are sort of this idea of like, okay, we're going to try and black and white something, but then there's always the spirit of it. The spirit probably ties into like, how do we enroll people in this? You know what?
Correct.
And you saw that as a big gap. in the government side was never going to quite figure out how to maybe shift that. So you decided to plunge in that space between here's society, here's the government, their laws. Can I play in the middle? Oh, all right. I get it.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, because my role before was regulating entities, right?
Right. So, okay, making sure people are following.
Yeah. And that's awesome, but really, really hard because guess what? People hate you. I don't mean it. And like, but actually, I will say.
Well, you're the bad guy. You're the cop.
And have had personal attacks. I mean, obviously not me, but to the agency, but a lot of angry people. And I think that experience was really, really helpful for me to understand like, oh, wow, like we're just not doing the thing to communicate in a way that people understand what they can do. And there's just so much, and you know, this misinformation. And it's way better to give a carrot. It's way better to show people how they can improve instead of, you know, telling them what they did wrong. People respond much better when you can say, like, I get you want to do more. Here are some options, and to reward people for the good and to set good models. And I think that, honestly, people respond to that, especially in the private sector.
We just need to get enrolled. We need to get educated. Mm-hmm. I think people in general want to do the
in good, general,
the good
you know,
thing.
And
not everybody, but most people want to do this.
I actually believe everybody. It's just what are our constraints, right? So if you're a business, frankly, no matter what size, right, your goal is you got to make sure you survive to make a profit. If you're able to make a profit, you want to make sure you make a bigger profit. You want to support your employees, et cetera. You want to provide fair wages and insurance and health and all those things and also make a profit. The problem, I think, and the gap, which, you know, some of what you're doing with all the different organizations too, is can we do both? Can we make a profit and make an impact? And I really believe we can. There are some really great business models out there and businesses who have done that. And so how do we make that to be the norm?
So let's talk about that. So how are we getting that done? So maybe explain to us a little bit about the business you founded.
Yeah.
How's it work? What are you doing?
So Hey Social Good is a social impact tech company or data company. And what we do is we essentially try to use data analytics to help businesses evaluate, assess, and help guide them on achieving a sustainable journey. For some of the listeners who are here, they probably understand B Corp, which is phenomenal. They've been around a long time. I think it's excellent. I hope every business get there, but oftentimes for most businesses, they can't start from that point yet, right? They kind of need a little bit of guidance before they get there. And that's really where Hey Social Good comes in, is we're trying to make it easier. Our goal is to make it easier for you to get your form together where it's more affordable, more accessible. Sometimes we like to think about, you know, a little bit like QuickBooks for social good. So we use data analytics, basically data-driven generative AI to almost like pre-fill things for companies. And then we also verify and evaluate according to the UN 17 Sustainable Development Goals. And I help design that goal based on the way we develop our standards here in the United States.
So give us kind of a real life story. So this is really focusing on smaller businesses, right?
And it can be, Well, it could be any business side, but not like the Fortune 500, because those already do their own. They have a whole team, right? They have probably a sustainability officer involved. But for 99% of the businesses in this country, we don't have anything easily accessible for them. And when I mean accessible, I mean in terms of resources, right? Or funding or time or all of those.
Give me a success story. Like, here's a client we worked with that raised their hand and said, you know, I think we need some help over here.
Yeah.
So what does that look like? How do you engage? And how do we define success? You know, how do we know at the end of the day, wow, now we're doing the right thing. Now we understand.
Right. I would say in the very beginning, lots of businesses say they can't do anything because it's too expensive and they don't have the time, which I actually don't think that's not true. And so what the people who come to us are people who want to do something and they're not sure what to do, or people who recognize that they want to get other people or other businesses to work on sustainability. So what we do is we basically quickly evaluate and assess what their existing social good practices are. I use the term social good rather than—
So you come in and do an overall assessment in that space.
We capture all public available information. That includes everything, for example, on their website, in the news, third-party databases. Let's say someone says like, oh yeah, well, we donate to a nonprofit. Well, fantastic. We're going to kind of find out like, are you actually providing funding to that third party? So we do that and we take all that information and then we cross-match with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, We took the UN SDGs, which has a lot of metrics and lots of detail pieces in there. And we broke
lots of complexity that
a lot of complexity
the average person ever wants to get into. Okay.
There's the 17 goals, but you know, it took the UN committee 5 years to develop those, right? And obviously there's a lot of details in there. And when they developed it, it's, by the way, UN is a government-like agency. They're not thinking about businesses. So we translate it to in terms of like, what is a social good practice? And I don't use the term sustainability because it's everything under the goals, right? So it's everything that's from equitable pay, fair wage, all the way to, are you operating more sustainably, reducing your emissions? Those are two, but everything in between. So what we do is we identify what those practices are, we pull them out, and we basically cross-match to see, like, are you making consistent, repeated practices along those sustainable goals? And then we recognize the ones who are, we metal rank the ones who are doing well, and then a lot of them who are really interested for whatever reason, maybe like encouragement from their, you know, sales or vendors, we will also verify based on additional information that's submitted to us. We're looking at any documentation, any evidence of their practices. For example, let's say a business has said they installed solar panels, but their goal is in 5 years to be 50%, right, renewable. But they can't quite get any certification yet because certification costs a lot of money. And so what they can do is they can submit those receipts to us and evidence and pictures, and we will reevaluate and look at those. So those are examples of how we verify businesses for their sustainable practices. We're really, really excited. You asked a really good, positive example. We've had many businesses who kind of started, and then because they're working with us, maybe they got a bronze medal ranking, and then the next year they're like, how do we get to gold? Or how do I get verified, right? We want to do better. Already those businesses, they want to do it anyways, right? Obviously, the mission of Hey Social Good is to encourage every single business to get on the sustainable journey, no matter how or what, even if it's just to start tracking your baseline, like activities. And that really is our goal, is to try to cover and provide an avenue and a pathway for all businesses to do so. Because like I said, 99% of businesses in this country aren't doing anything, even if they wanted to.
Yeah. What I heard, the government, UN folks have created some standards. They put a lot of effort in and say, this is what we'd like to see people doing. If they were doing this, we'd have a great positive impact. Then you got a whole crew of people that are going, okay, I would like to be a better citizen. I hear this stuff. I think it's important, but I have no idea how to engage. Don't know how to measure it. I don't even know about these standards, right? I just know I'd like to do better. And that's where you show up and say, all right, let us take a look at what you're doing. And then we can compare that to what exists in the world. And you can have some measurements and some understanding as to, oh, I'm a little below, I'm a little above. And here's some opportunities to take it to the next level.
Yes, exactly. 100%.
And then put it in like almost an award system kind of thing that says, hey, you're a bright. All right. So that's the human side.
That's the human side. And that's the encouragement. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And I think the other thing that's really important to recognize too is that there is an issue, and I'll bring it up, of greenwashing. And greenwashing is an interesting phenomenon, I would say. I think it didn't start because people wanted to purposely greenwash. You could make the case a few entities do, but so far our experience has been that it's because there's just, it's so complex. So if you talk to someone who's in renewable energy, for example, they've been doing it for 5 years, 10 years. Now you're a new business. Let's say I sell granola bars. And I'm like, well, I want to be renewable. Where do I start? You don't have, did you go to school for renewable energy? Do you have training for renewable energy? Do you have training for any of this? And so what happens is people are like, well, we want to do, they kind of do the best that they can. And sometimes put information out there, and whatever information you put out there, and I know this personally, there's always people who are like, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
I mean, this happens a lot. This literally just happened even with someone I know where they're trying to do the best they can. For example, the awards we give, that's a Verify Award, is not plastic based and it's a wooden block, right? For example, for one of our clients. But then there's someone says like, yeah, but do you know if that wood is renewable? So I think one of the
things— Somebody wants to raise the bar.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to really, and I'm going to take the soapbox for a second, but I really want to take the guilt away from a lot of our efforts. I just don't think that's helpful. That's not supporting a collaborative effort. I know that you really care about, but it's like, there is no perfect solution. By the way, I've been in this space a really long time. There is no perfect solution. The only solution we have is to continue to take steps forward. So even if we feel like, oh my gosh, I know I'm not doing this thing and it's not enough, it's better than not doing something, right? So something else, people are like, yeah, I know I'm recycling. I know that's enough. I'm like, but you're doing something. And yes, I can go on and on about whether recycling helps or not, but that's kind of besides the point because it's your journey. I need you to do more and improve, you being an individual or a business, right? If you decide as a business and you say you, I don't know, sell t-shirts, and you're like, I'm not going to use poly bags anymore. Do you know how huge an impact that is? Think about it. Like, let's say in 1 year you sell 50,000 t-shirts. And typically, traditional approach is every single t-shirt is packed in a plastic bag. But what if you, as the owner of that t-shirt company, decides, like, we're not going to do that anymore. We're just going to eliminate that because it doesn't even matter. People don't want to see it. That is it. That's where I feel like the power of this is so big. And I want to really empower and encourage businesses to recognize the power they have.
And from the customer perspective,
100%.
saying, you know, if I got choice between company A and company B,
yeah.
I'm educated at a level going, oh, I should buy that product because it's, you know, overall it's better. I can see, right? We all know plastic's not a good thing.
Right.
And so the packaging goes a long ways towards going, okay.
And moving back to the better information too, right? Because that's an activity people can really recognize. So sorry, I know I kind of went off track a little bit about on greenwashing, but this is how we can correct for greenwashing, right? How we can help educate people on like, well, what does it really mean when you say sustainable? And that's one of the things, like, for example, for one of our clients, we really look at that in detail. Greenwashing is a real phenomenon. And what's sad about it is that now it's so bad that even some businesses are worried about being greenwashers that they stop. I don't want them to stop. I want them to do more. Is it perfect? No. I mean, I will say some of the biggest, what you might be considered a sustainable company, right, in the world, even they've said, like, look, we're not perfect. We're just trying to do the right thing, especially when you consider the supply chain.
All right. It's a journey, right? I mean, we're just
It is absolutely a journey, and I want to get that. It is a journey. We're just trying to do better every day.
Yeah. But some people like to sit back and judge. I think that's what you're
saying. Well, because it's easier to do that, right?
Exactly. I'm not doing anything, but I sure can tell you what you're not doing. Well, I love that. I see what you're doing with that business. And I love what you're saying. It's like back to the psychological, the people part of it is it's so important because otherwise just nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the game you're playing today, which leads to this film festival.
Oh, right.
So now what are we doing with that? Because now we're trying to tell some stories, right? To enroll people and get people motivated to get into the game. So tell us about the film festival.
Yeah. So the San Diego Environmental Film Festival is something I'm really proud of. And my co-founder is Lindsay Bauman. She's amazing. But basically, I had this idea when I was at EPA when I recognized this huge gap of like, we're not communicating the way that people need us to communicate in a way that they understand, in a way that they can feel empowered to do something. I actually tried to make a film festival happen under EPA. And I want to thank to all the EPAers who supported that. But ultimately, for all kinds of good reasons, we couldn't do it. It was kind of this bucket list thing that I really wanted to do because I feel like this is a way to connect with our community and with our citizens.
Reason number 15 for leaving the EPA. It won't let me do my film festival.
Exactly. That's funny. I just feel like we have to do, so what you'll find is like, I'm trying to figure out every way possible of trying to get the word out. And we all receive information differently. I used to be really naive and think like, if we just had the best data as a scientist, that would be sufficient. No, because you can have the best data, but if you're not really good at communicating what it means for you, no one can understand it and no one will act on it. The film festival for me is really definitely a labor of passion, but it is one where I believe that storytelling and art has been missed out. And it is actually what connects and weaves all of us together. I want to support amazing storytelling by filmmakers and storytellers out there. I want people to know that environment or sustainability isn't just about the science or the data, but it's actually about how we connect with each other as people. The San Diego Environmental Film Festival also is unique that we really also want to focus on the people's experience of the impact of environment and how we connect with our environment, what it means to work on the environment because it has a direct impact on ourselves. And there's a lot of story in that about community, about equity, about environmental justice that's just not told to be honest, the vulnerable populations who are suffering, I can go on about that, you know, kind of the environmental pollution that's out there, the land that we all live on and work from, that story is not out there enough. Really, I think this film festival is to try to be, you said this earlier, kind of the voice of the community and how we can all play a role. So it is using the power of storytelling and art to move out there because we all have to be connected, right? It can't just be all data and finances.
Cindy Jay, I love that. And it goes back to, again, you're trying to attack this space.
Yes.
Moving off your data-driven personality, whatever. The business at some level is kind of data driven, right?
Yes,
I mean, we got scoreboards and we got all these measurements. And now it's like a whole nother way to say, now how do we bring the arts people into this thing?
Yes.
How do we tell the story where it hits your heart, the emotions, those, I don't know, I got a chill just thinking about it. That's like really cool that you've gone down that path. I love that.
Well, we need the storytellers. They're like experts, right? In telling the stories. Like when you meet someone who's one of these filmmaker storytellers, I mean, I will always go back, and this is a shout out to After 95 production company who made Our Islands on the Sea, and it's 4 minutes, and it's still, I've probably watched it 10 times. Every time I watch it, my heart wrenches, and it makes me want to do more. It's 4 minutes. And so I think, like, if it affects me, what about the everyday citizen who didn't even know about this little tiny film?
Exactly.
And they're just like, okay, well, what can I do? The other thing I want to mention for our film festival is not just to show the problem, it's really to identify solutions and create impact. So a shout out to all the environmental organizations and sustainable focused vendors. You know, last year, November 2023, we had like a block party and they all came. And the idea too at the fest is to provide solutions for people to see what other organizations are doing so that they're interacting with practitioners and not just watching a film. That's the other goal.
So it's a get together. Film.
Yes, yeah. It absolutely is a get together. There's a lot of those, but it's a way to bring people to kind of join together around the stories, to support the artists, but also to show like there are things you can do.
I'm a master facilitator. Cindy, give me a call when you want to bring that crew together.
Oh my gosh.
I'll wave my hands around.
I will. Jeff, you offered it. I'm going to take it.
Yeah. Okay. You heard it here. You can hold me to it. Well, I just remember we were talking earlier too about the movie Beyond Zero, which was a documentary about this whole thing about the tiles and the floors and all this. It's amazing what they've done to get to the kind of zero carbon and in an industry that they were 100% the wrong way. But for me, the story was the leadership and what it took and the endurance. And, you know, 20 years later, we're finally getting there. And the CEO who drove this whole thing, he passes away. And then, well, the next guy's come in and follows.
Right.
You know, there's just such a great story there. And sales 101 is, you know, statistics don't sell. It's like you got to get this emotional piece into
it. You need both.
Yeah. And that's what you recognize at the EPA. And look at you out here. Dude. I love it.
Beyond Zero, maybe they should submit it for this year.
Yeah.
Our submissions are open.
All right. Well, let's make that happen. I know the people.
Awesome.
Well, conscious capitalism. I mean,
yes.
Actually, part of the deal that when they came out here was that we're like showing that at all the universities.
Right.
Along with the whole curriculum. So that's part of what Conscious Capital is doing.
That's awesome. Well, and that's the other thing too, right? A lot of these films, you know, I'm a big film watcher. I love films and film buff. But here's the reality is a lot of amazing artists and filmmakers, they don't get their films out there enough. Like, how do you get access to it?
Right.
The distribution is really hard. So one of our other goals as staff, we like kindly call it, is to make sure that we can continue to offer different ways to distribute. So beyond just the film festival, to create other pathways for their films to continue to be seen by people who want to know about the stories and how they can impact.
So Cindy J, you haven't completely walked away from the idea of policy. I know you through Business for Good, and that's part of the whole idea of that model is to help influence policy here locally. You were sharing with me before we started the show that you have a new role with the mayor. So talk about policy a little bit. How does that still fit in for what you're doing? Why is that important? And tell us about your new assignment that you have. Since you were bored and you needed something to do.
Since I know. I'm so glad you're asking me about policy. That's still really deep in my heart because it is where we as citizens can make impact. Sometimes I think we don't realize that. No one's really trained us unless you happen to be adjacent or part of it. First, I'll just say I'm really, really excited and proud to be appointed by the mayor's office to be on the city's climate advisory board.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. And the reason I'm doing that and taking time to be a part of that is because to support, I think, the city's effort in trying to achieve 2035 zero emissions for the city of San Diego, which is humongous. There's a lot of work that's getting done by the staff, by all the different environmental organizations and all the other parties involved. Policy is at the heart of where we can make direct impact. And the reason I'm so involved is because that's where you can see change, I think, bigger way, right? So either citywide, statewide, I mentioned the compost policy, which has been in the works. And so we just need everyday people to be part of this effort. One of the things I invite everyone to do, and I know it's really hard, try to go to a city council meeting, try to go to a county supervisor's meeting. Your voice as an individual citizen is magnified like 100 times if you call in or show up. And what people don't realize is that all these decisions are being made about our lives that you and I basically live in every day, right? Things, for example, about a lot of people think city, they just think, oh, the roads suck. It is actually beyond just the roads, right? It's everything. Every decision is made. And we actually have an opportunity as a citizen to take part. And the easiest way is we can write a letter. They make it really easy. You can go and email the mayor's office, for example, any of the city council members, officials. You can show up, but your vote is so important. So as someone who worked at the federal government and who used to receive public comment, we work so hard to take every single comment and we have to categorize it, you know, respond to it. When basically an individual submits a comment, we take it, even if it's in like in a letter and handwritten, we have to decipher it, we add to it, and we say, oh, so many comments care about this. And it actually influences in how we put out new laws, standards, and policy. So I'm still involved in the local level because I think that's my part as a citizen and I want to be supportive.
Well, that's a great message because I'll just say, for me personally, I kind of look at that kind of thing. I go, I'm not going to waste my time doing that, right? Because I just feel like it falls on deaf ears and it's like I'm just one little guy trying to make a message here. But you're saying, no, that's not true.
Yes, it's not true.
That's a story I made up.
Well, to be honest, why would you know that? And this is, and I'll bring in Business for Good San Diego. Kudos to them. It's such an important organization because it is a nonprofit org that really wants to be the voice for businesses. The 99% of businesses here in San Diego that are considered small, medium-sized, that doesn't have a collective voice. And there's a lot of issues being basically made that it affects businesses and individuals. So I would say as being part of an organization like that for me is so critical because it connects me to people who really want to work on advocacy in a real way. And when you're part of a collective that think that way and want to make action happen, it's just really empowering and encouraging, right? It's like you have your friends and you're like, yeah, we should do that. And when you say like, hey, we need to do a letter writing campaign that I agree. It's like, what? That old thing again from college, but it actually works. When there's an environment organization out there who's trying to do something really important, we want to be there to support like restoration of Mission Bay, for example, that San Diego Audubon Society is trying to do. We want to be that voice to support like, yeah, businesses actually care about those things. And so that's for me why it's really important to put all of those things together.
Yeah. You're connecting dots.
I am. I'm trying to trying to connect all the dots as best as I can.
So with that said, unfortunately, we're at the end of the show here. So my question to you is, we talked about a lot of different things. No one remembered anything. What's the one thing you'd want them to remember out of this conversation? What's the big idea?
I think the big idea is to embrace climate optimism. I did not coin that term. That term has been coined by lots of different amazing people in this space. And I would say, like, look for ways that you can be a part of. There's so many here in San Diego, if you're a local San Diegan. It's growing. Also, do a shout out to the San Diego Green New Deal organization. That basically is a collection of like 50 to 60 different organizations that's coming together to try to make impact in some way that's meaningful and aligned with their values. So I would say like embrace the optimism. If you don't have time, I totally get it. But there are all kinds of different activities and ways. Just reach out to any one of those organizations, even if it's just to learn about it. Like my whole thing is step number one, learn about it and just be curious. You call it conscious curiosity. I totally embrace that because it's curiosity that takes us to the next step.
I love that. Kind of been your message the whole time here.
Yeah.
Just get engaged. Take a little step. Don't be overwhelmed by the whole big problem. Cindy J, I want to thank you for taking the time to come to the show. And I definitely want to thank you for all the work you've been doing throughout your whole career. Starting on the big side with the government, the EPA, and now trying to fix that gap of actually taken policy and answers and connecting it to our businesses and our citizens. So Kudos to you.
Oh my God, and you're so welcome. Well, I want to thank all the people who are like part of my team that I'm with or crew that I met, all the people that I just mentioned. I couldn't have done any of it without all of the support.
Yep. We need all the people around us.
We do. We need more people.
We need everybody. Join us. That's the goal, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get everybody in the game. Well, thank you very much. And that's our show for the day. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, or most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.